We made this.
Hello and welcome to Frame to Frame, part of the We Made This podcast network. We are the podcast that take two seemingly unconnected films and slam them together like a fast-talking donkey and a thespian poo. I'm Andy Williams.
And I'm Sean Wilson.
And this week we're talking to you about movies that made us angry. Yes, it's that time of year where all the festive cheer has completely gone out of the window because we are just going to be angry. It's cathartic though, isn't it? It's good to get angry at certain things and then you'll have space for all the cheer afterwards.
Aren't people normally angry on Black Friday because they normally kill each other, don't they? Mind you, I don't think either of us got involved in that this year, do we? I didn't.
I mean, I did, but we will not get into that.
You did? Okay, you didn't attack anyone with an ironing board or something, did you?
I mean, that's for the judge to decide. The CCTV, I feel, speaks for itself.
If this is the last ever podcast, then I want us to go out with a bang. So,
literally.
Yeah.
So this week we're talking about movies that made us angry. So we've each chosen films that have, oddly enough, both been animated. So they're both animated films that made us angry.
I want to set the record absolutely straight before we even reveal what the films are. I want to make it clear, I did not pick the first of these two movies, all right? I'm not responsible for this. I'm responsible for the second one, which makes absolute sense if we're talking getting angry, okay?
Well, we'll get to our justifications for it. So yeah. I picked Shrek and Sean picked The Emoji Movie. And we're each going to be allowed our justifications. And we're going to allow the other person to talk and then we'll discuss the films as a whole. So as we always do on this podcast, we go chronologically. So that falls to me to start off by justifying my absolute anger towards Shrek.
I mean, I can just hear, like literally hear in the background, everyone going, what? Like, is it, but you go for it.
So, it's the title of the episode. The people know what they're clicking at this point. So to tell the story of Shrek, it follows the titular Shrek, an ogre in a swamp who is overrun by fairy tale characters. So because of this, his home being invaded, he decides that he's going to fix it by going to speak to Lord Farquaad, who wants to be a king. He has found out that to be a king, he has to marry a princess, because that's clearly how it works. And Shrek makes a deal to regain the control of his own swamp. He will rescue Princess Fiona, who Lord Farquaad wants to marry. He ends up being embroiled with Donkey, imaginative name, who's played by Eddie Murphy. Shrek then embarks on a quest to go across and save the princess from the tower, and he ends up falling in love with the princess, who is hiding a secret of her own.
I can hear your contempt. I mean, even when you're doing the plot synopsis, I can hear how much you don't like it. I mean, it's really quite staggering, but go on.
Right, so my main problem with it starts from the fact that it's everything around Shrek that's a problem, right? It's the idea that you get a load of celebrities into a recording booth and you get self-referential dialogue, and then suddenly you've got a film. And I mean, I don't understand. I'm going to go straight on the attack here. I don't understand how you can hate something along the lines of The Greatest Showman for its anachronisms, but be perfectly fine with Shrek.
Oh, hang on, you're making it personal to me. I thought you were using you as in the royal you. You're actually pointing directly at me.
Yeah, right, yeah. Okay, yeah. Right, yeah. I'm going to you.
I do hate The Greatest Showman because it's you know, aesthetically ugly, auto-tune garbage. But anyway, right, this is your argument, so you keep going.
You heard the final part of Shrek, right? Where I'm a believer is so clearly auto. I don't understand the difference.
That is quite clearly ironic. That's quite clearly meant to be ironically bad.
Whereas it was meant to be bad.
In the Greatest Showman, they all do actually genuinely think they're brilliant singers, which is part of the problem. It's earnest, and you know, earnestness to me is like nails on a chalk. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that. I mean, we're here to talk about
Shrek. I'm going straight on the attack. I'm going straight in for the attack. So as a result of Shrek, as a direct result of Shrek, I will list some of the films that we ended up with. Shark Tale, Madagascar, Over the Hedge, B-Movie, Kung Fu Panda, Monsters vs. Aliens, Megamind, Rise of the Guardians, Trolls, all of the spin-offs, Boss Baby. The effects of Shrek are still being held within Hollywood today, because the idea of, hey, if we just get a load of celebrities, then you know what? It doesn't matter if our plot's rubbish. It doesn't matter if it doesn't appeal to children. It's all the sassy CGI that's designed to appeal to adults with like the know-it-all attitude. You've always got this know-it-all character in one of these films, and it just really irks me because Shrek is a horrible, horrible character. He doesn't learn anything. He's selfish and disgusting at the beginning, and hey, look, it's funny to be selfish and disgusting because, you know, and by the way, why does he use a toilet in the beginning? He lives in a swamp. He bathes in mud. Why has he got a toilet?
I mean, you're finding logic where I think it's a futile enterprise, really. I mean, I will say you have got a point there. What you're basically taking a pop at is the DreamWorks animation style that was set in motion by Shrek. I will concede you that this did set in motion a trend of fairly cruddy animated movies, including the Shrek sequels. I will say the Shrek sequels, with the exception of the second one, are pretty poor. They're not very good at all. And I do agree that the DreamWorks animated movies were always kind of the lesser brother of Pixar. Pixar was just kind of so sophisticated and so up there. And yeah, I do agree that as a result of Shrek, that the DreamWorks movies did fall into this kind of like miasma of just annoying self-referential gags. But Shrek was the outlier. It was the one that started it. And there is a real freshness and zip to it. I mean, did you see this in the cinema? This is the thing.
Right. So I was 13 when this came out. No.
Okay. Well, I was 14 and I did. So, I mean, I don't really know.
We were at 13 and 14, doesn't it?
It does actually. What it shows is I'm open-minded and inclusive, and I'm filled with the love of the world. No, what it shows is I would pretty much go and watch anything. I mean, don't forget, this was the year that Tomb Raider came out, Lara Croft Tomb Raider, although that probably makes sense why a teenage boy would go and watch that. Is this a movie that you've always hated, or is this something that's crept up on you in the years since you watched it in the cinema?
So I didn't watch it in the cinema. That's probably the key thing.
Oh, right, okay.
It was just everyone around it at the time, and it was everywhere, and there was nothing, like, there was no escape. Oh, Shrek's amazing, Shrek's brilliant, blah, blah, blah. So then, to begin with, I was just like, oh, that's passed me by, whatever. And then it just kept going. It keeps going. It just keeps appearing for some reason. So then sort of eventually I caught up with it, and I was like, oh, this is basically doing to fairy tales what The Princess Bride did 12 years earlier and did it better. Because what The Princess Bride does is it looks at fairy tale conventions and manages to turn them on its head, whereas I think what Shrek tries to do is lean into them and try and make them funny. It's not clever enough. It's not a good enough script to do that. What it does is it brings up the idea, and it's similar to these really bad world-building films that we've had, such as, you know, like the Justice League films, for example. And what I mean by that is you have the gingerbread man, right? And the film just basically stops for a second, says, hey, look, it's the gingerbread man. And then moves on. And hey, look, it's Pinocchio. This is a character you know. And hey, look, there's Cinderella. There's the three little pigs. And it expects you to enjoy the fact that it's got these references in there, which I get was a relatively new thing at the time to have like an entire world around the film. But what it does is it doesn't do anything with it. It's more interested in telling its buddy movie between Eddie Murphy's Donkey and Mike Myers' Shrek. It just doesn't, it's not interested in exploring possibly some of the more interesting elements of it, where it could have then really taken like a razor to the fairy tale conventions and the blatant sexism within fairy tales and those sorts of things, the whitewashing, all this sort of stuff. But it's not interested in that. It's not interested in the story of an outsider within a fairy tale world. It's interested in its very basic love story and buddy movie. And it doesn't work for me. I don't understand why people love it so much. I don't understand why it's got such reverential treatment from everybody. As soon as you mention I don't like Shrek, everyone reacts with outrage, as if like there's something wrong with you.
Correctly so. Correctly so. I mean, it's a family movie. It's not about a movie about smashing the patriarchy. I mean, it's a family movie that walks that finest of lines between being quite wholesome and actually being quite rude.
Wholesome.
I mean, I remember
wholesome. There's awesome. Fart jokes in there. There's burp jokes
in there.
Yeah, well,
that's what I mean.
There's rhyming in there that's sort of signalling that you need to wipe your...
Yeah, that's what's so good about it, because it's ribald, but it's got a good heart to it. I mean, it starts off with the lavatory joke. It starts off with him thumbing through the fairy tale book, and then he goes, ah, what a lord of... And he tears it out and uses it as loo roll. But I remember seeing that in the cinema, thinking, oh, okay, that's a really good subversion of the usual Beauty and the Beast Disney trope, where you see the book being thumbed at the beginning and then it takes you into the book. You kind of like, okay, so it's that Shrek is both inside the joke and outside the joke, because it undermines those conventions, but it also absorbs them, because it is a love story. about the fact that in that beauty is on the inside, not on the outside.
Well no, because it isn't. Not for Shrek. Shrek is a horrible, horrible, selfish character. He acts entirely for himself. Look, suddenly I've fallen in love with someone, so I'm going to go and disrupt everyone else's wedding days and do what I want.
It is an archetypal fairy tale. She's about to get married to the baddie. You don't want to see her getting married to Lord Farquaad, who incidentally is voiced brilliantly by John Lithgow. Mm-hmm. John Lithgow's got one of the best voices in showbiz. You're not supposed to want her to marry him. I mean, if the wedding gets disrupted, it's all for the better.
Yeah, I mean, but it's still a selfish act on Shrek's part. He's not doing it to stop her from marrying Lord Farquaad because Lord Farquaad's evil. He's doing it because he wants to marry her. It's selfish.
Were you at a wedding when you were younger, and did someone run in and say, I object? So, I mean, I get the feeling there is some deep-seated torment going on here.
No, I just don't understand. Honestly, the crux of it is, the reason I picked this is I don't understand why everyone loves it so much. It's just not intelligent enough to do what it's trying to do. It's not a smart enough script to be able to walk the lines that you say that it walks for you. It doesn't take a look at what a fairy tale is. It doesn't sort of deconstruct what a fairy tale is. All it does is it shows you elements of fairy tales and says, see, this is how the sausage is made. And anyway, let's get on with our fairy tale. And that doesn't work.
I mean, younger audiences kind of need to know how the sausage is made, because that's part of the appeal of the movie. I mean, one should say it's adapted from a book by William Lustig. It didn't arrive ex nihilo on the screen. So one should point that out straight away. I mean, can I launch defense of it now?
If you must, but be prepared for holes to be poked in every single defense.
Well, I mean, I've poked holes in yours, so you can poke holes in mine, and that's not a euphemism. basically, I remember seeing this. I mean, it's one of those, for me, it's one of those classic animated movies where I watched it in the cinema at the age of 14, and you get the broad gags. There are so many other gags layered within this movie. I mean, some of them are actually, like you mentioned earlier, some of them are actually quite staggering for a U-rated movie. And I love the cheeky way they managed to smuggle that in there. When Lord Farquaad is presented with the magic mirror, and he basically has to choose his prospective princesses in a version of Bachelorette, it kind of cuts cycles through like all of the classic princesses like Cinderella and Snow White. And it says about Snow White, although she lives with seven other men, she's not easy. And it's kind of like, I mean, how then that's the kind of gag that you don't get as a kid. It's one of those classic things where like that's in there for the adults, but as a kid you wouldn't get it because you wouldn't.
Yeah, because those jokes are the best, aren't they? Look, hey adults, this is for you.
No, but that's not exactly unique to Shrek. I mean, so many animated movies have done that,
mostly from the films that I listed earlier.
Well, I mean, no, because I think those movies don't have any heart to them. And I think the thing is with Shrek, He is a dick at the start. He is, but that's how you're meant to see him. He's horrible to Donkey, although Donkey is, you know, annoying and slightly insufferable, but he's got a good heart as well. And it's all about learning.
You're trying to stand up for Shrek's character arc. He doesn't have a character arc. He's the same in the end that he is at the beginning. He's selfish. No. He's self-centered. He wants to do what he wants to do. He basically wants his own space, and he just wants to shut everybody out. And that's pretty much what he does. Until the end of the film, when he decides, you know what? I kind of liked spending time with that lady. I'm going to go and take her for myself.
She teaches him that it's not good to wallow in misery and self-pity, literally and figuratively wallow in self-misery and pity. And she, Fiona, voiced by Cameron Diaz, we should say, has basically had to spend her entire life being isolated. So she is kind of matched with him in a way, although he doesn't know that she actually turns into an ogre herself at night.
And yeah, because they needed a plot. They needed a plot point, so they had to include something. Honestly, that's ridiculous.
Then it's a plot point, isn't it? So
it's so grinding. It's so like, oh, right, okay, so we need them to have some kind of similarity. What should we do? Oh, yeah, she's got... it's like you're in a writer's room, right? And someone just goes, oh, we need them to have some reason to get together. So what is that? She could be an ogre. But sorry, we haven't referenced anything to do with her being an ogre at any point earlier on. Oh yeah, no, it was a witch that turned her into an ogre, and it only happens at nighttime. Oh, okay, fair enough, sound logic. No, there's no magic witches. It doesn't happen in the film. It's literally out of nowhere, and then, oh yeah, suddenly I had a spell on me, so sorry.
That's kind of following in the Beauty and the Beast tradition, and you read into that what you will.
But that comes from the start. That's literally baked into the start of Beauty and the Beast. That is in... like it's brought up right at the beginning. It's set up in the world that they're setting up, but this is not. This is
it's in the storybook at the beginning. He reads it, and you think, oh, okay, what he's reading before tearing it out and using it for loo roll. You think he's just reading the archetypal fairy tale, but that archetypal fairy tale then gets mirrored within the narrative of the movie. This is what the movie does: is it embraces fairy tale conventions. And it undermines them at the same time. Clearly, you don't think it's funny at all. I mean, it must really rub you up the wrong way that this movie led to the invention of the Best Animated Film Oscar, because apparently that didn't exist before.
No, I think I think that is a shame in and of itself. I don't think that the animated medium should be separated the way that it is.
I agree. I agree with you on that. Yeah, I totally agree. It shouldn't be segregated like that. But for me, I mean, from my point of view, when I saw this as a 14-year-old, with the greatest respect, I don't think very many 14-year-olds have seen The Princess Bride, other than people who are probably that age at the time. So,
well, that's the thing. I wasn't 14 when I watched Shrek. I wasn't 13 when I watched Shrek. So I watched The Princess Bride first, because when I was getting into to those sorts of things and looking backwards at self-referential films, I watched The Princess Bride before I watched this.
That probably wasn't a good idea.
Well, it was great. I love The Princess Bride.
I just don't know how you can take against a movie where the three little pigs are all German and they talk about the big bad. Was it, he signed an eviction notice like that. I mean, I don't know how you could tell, the bit when Donkey gets the magic dust sprinkled on him. He's like, he can fly, he can talk. Yeah, that's right, fool. I'm a flying talking donkey. I mean, I don't know how you can not be swept up just in the irreverence of it.
Because it doesn't earn it.
How does it have to earn irreverence, though?
Because they're referencing, so obviously in the I Can Fly moment, he's referencing Peter Pan.
Yeah, yeah.
And that joke was literally done in Peter Pan. He can fly, you can fly, he can fly. He flew.
But then the follow-up gag is he can talk, so that's the thing. And the fact that he's a donkey.
But it's the same change of language. He can fly, he can fly, he flew. And so he's saying something different to everyone else. So you knew it was coming, because that's so baked into like the idea of the joke that they're telling is the same thing. So it's just looking back at something and saying, hey, this was good, wasn't it? It's the film equivalent of Peter Kay. It's like, hey, remember that thing from the 70s that you liked?
Whoa, hang on a minute. Now, are you going to tell me that you don't like Phoenix Nights or Car Share?
I would never go and watch Peter Kay in a stand-up special.
We are broadly simpatico on most topics. We wildly diverge on comedy. Right, okay. But I'm going to out you now. You've never seen Father Ted, right?
I've never seen Father Ted. That's not because I don't think I'd like Father Ted. It's just there's a lot of it and I think, feck it.
Very, very good. Good reference. But Father Ted is your Hamilton, in as much as you haven't seen Father Ted and I haven't seen Hamilton. So I think, you know...
Hamilton's 2.5 hours and then you're done. Father Ted is a commitment.
Well, Father Ted, I mean, I can give you a curated list of Father Ted episodes if you really want it. I can give you the best.
I mean, I know you can. You did this for X-Files for me and I still didn't watch all of them.
Yeah, I know. And don't I feel like a fool for that? I feel really hard done by there. But to get back to Shrek, I mean, I just think that the level of visual and verbal wordplay is brilliant. And it is saucy. Like when Shrek and Donkey, I mean, brilliantly voiced by Mike Myers and Eddie Murphy, when they come across Lord Farquaad's tower and Shrek just assesses it and goes, do you think he's compensated for something like that? And as a 14-year-old, you don't quite get what that means. And then it's a few years like, oh, right, now I see what he means. I thought it was referring to the fact that Lord Farquaad is short, but no, it means something else. So, but it's not all gags like that. I mean, there are... You know, there's the escape from the dragon, which is done, you know, with real sort of vision for the time, visually sophisticated CGI. You've got a lovely score from John Powell and Harry Gregson-Williams, both of whom I've interviewed, and they're wonderful. I've interviewed them on separate occasions.
Oh, just because you're mates with them, you're going to stand up for them?
not mates. I haven't got them on my phone.
film, if you talk to anyone about the soundtrack to Shrek, they're not thinking you're talking about the score.
I get that.
Naughty songs that are crowbarred in.
With the greatest of respect, this film introduced me to Smash Mouth All-Stars.
I mean, it introduced everyone to Smash Mouth All-Star, and then, Smash Mouth did nothing afterwards.
Well, no, they didn't.
It's an absolute time capsule in that sense.
It doesn't deny that it's a great song, and it's used really well in the film. Also introduced me to the Pina Colada song. several other songs I hadn't heard at that age. There's also, I've got to mention the bit with Vincent Cassel as Monsieur Hood, who is just, that's almost Monty Python. I think that's almost Monty Python levels of brilliance, that bit.
I was waiting for you to bring up Python. Yeah, I was genuinely waiting for it, because that's kind of the one comedy thing that we will agree on. And
the only comedy thing we'll agree on.
I don't think that this earns that. I don't understand. So number one, the main reason for anger, as far as I'm concerned, is to do with everything around it. It's to do with, oh my God, you have to watch Shrek. Oh my God, you don't like Shrek. What's the matter?
You don't like the fact that people revere it. It's not the film. It's people's reactions to it.
So it's that, coupled with the fact the film's not good enough to warrant that. For me, I don't understand how people can revere it that much. And especially, I think it's an age thing, right? It's because you talk to people of our generation and slightly younger, this is like their childhoods and it's amazing. Whereas if you talk to sort of the older generation, you're not going to get that same reverence towards it. And I just don't see how, I don't see too much of a difference between this and Boss Baby. I don't see too much of a difference between this and Trolls. It's fine. It's not world-changingly amazing. It's not like the greatest animated film I've ever seen. It's not even the greatest animated film of that year. You know,
no, because you're going to say Monsters Inc., aren't you? Which I would agree. I would agree that Monsters Inc. is better, because it's Pixar. It's more deft in the way that it tells its story.
It's not okay to just turn, because Billy Crystal has such a reverence within Monsters Inc. He is funny. There are odd, weird little moments that they go off, and like that's a much better buddy film. That you buy their relationship a lot more. Whereas in Shrek, it just seems like, right, okay, we have to have a chalk and cheese. We have to do we basically have to do Lethal Weapon. We basically have to do Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Or
I watched that again recently. It's brilliant.
We have to have that formula. We have to have the acerbic one that doesn't like anything, the one that's annoyed at everything, and then we have to have the fast talking motor mouth that's going to try and, you know, it's Rush Hour sort of thing. It's you have to have that relationship between the same central characters, and it just really annoys me that it uses it. It tries to point out generic conventions that it actually just falls into using in the same place, and I just don't understand. It's not to do with the fact that people. It's not just to do with the fact that people like this film. It's to do with the fact of just the amount, the fact that you're the outlier for thinking something different. Whereas if someone said to you, you know what, Inside Out is a little bit boring, you sort of go, oh, okay, fair enough. Whereas if you say to like someone, oh yeah, I don't really like Shrek, you're like, oh my God, you're mad. You don't like Shrek? No, I don't. And then coupled with that, you've got the entire slate of the DreamWorks Animation Studio, which is... basically knockoffs of Shrek.
There are occasional outliers to that. The How to Train Your Dragon series is brilliant. I'm assuming you like those.
Yeah.
Again, scored by John Powell. Did a brilliant job. So they're outliers in the DreamWorks stable. I mean, one should say, I mean, with Shrek, I mean, I think in your mind, bearing in mind this came out 6 years after Toy Story, and Toy Story was the one that changed the game. I mean, Toy Story wasn't just visually extraordinary. In terms of its narrative, it was so perceptive and so brilliant, and it hinged on such a simple idea.
And it was the first film I remember seeing in the cinema.
Yeah, so Toy Story, well, I mean, I saw it on my 9th birthday, so, I mean, it was important for both of us for different reasons, but Shrek doesn't have quite that level of elemental simplicity. Shrek doesn't have the level of surprise in the fact that, wow, this is the first CGI feature-length movie. Like, Shrek doesn't have that advantage. I think what Shrek does have is a pretty consistent gag rate that is, you know, very, very funny. I mean, I'll go back to the Monsieur Hood bit, which is, I mean, again, it's one of those things where I watch it now, I'm like, you know, he's always on the lookout for a saucy little maid. What he's saying is, I like to get paid. And it's like, I mean, little bits like that, which, and then it does, I mean, the Matrix bit after that, when she flies into the air and it does the bullet time.
Oh, yeah, that's
thing.
A great reference, isn't it? That's, I mean, not dated at all. And the kids really love the Matrix.
You have to put yourself back in the mindset of what it was in 2001, when that was still quite fresh at the time. It's not fresh now because everyone's overused it. That might be one of the gags that maybe hasn't aged as well. I still think it's really funny. I love its go for broke attitude, and I do think it is genuinely quite sweet. I don't agree with you that Shrek ends as a selfish character. He is a selfish character for most of the movie, but I think there is that redemptive arc at the
his
at
act
the end
of redemption is ultimately selfish because he's doing it for his own self gain.
I don't agree with that at all. Let's agree to disagree on that. I think the movie is much more good natured than that, in spite of how ribald and rude it is. I will agree that the series went downhill in increments after. I mean, I don't, you probably, sounds like you didn't even watch the sequels. No. If you didn't like this one, I mean, no. I mean, the sequels did become increasingly overly reliant on just really tired pop culture references, which were used as a crutch I mean, if you thought it was a problem in this one, blimey, it becomes a real problem in the other ones. I mean, although obviously the sequels did introduce Antonio Banderas as Puss in Boots, who is just wonderful.
Yeah, no, nothing to offer on that. Never saw it. Never had any interest in it.
You made the cat angry. You do not want to make the cat angry. Shrek, I do agree with you, it's probably a little overstated in terms of how good it is, but I just think it's just really good fun. I think the gag rate stands up. I really like the characters. I do think the animation is great. I think the animation still resonates now. I do like the way it's both a fairy tale and a subversion of a fairy tale.
Everything you think it is, I disagree with.
Well, there's a surprise. Otherwise, this conversation would be a complete waste of time, wouldn't it? If you were just basically pranking me.
I just don't understand how you can look at Shrek and see it for anything other than, hey, look, there's this thing over here. Hey, look. It's all distracting away from the quite bland story that they're trying to tell, which is it's trying to show, oh, look, fairy tales, they all tell the same sort of thing. And it's like, yeah, but that's what it's doing. It's doing the thing it's accusing other films of.
I mean, now you know what I feel like when people come up to me and say, Era of the Greatest Showman, it's like the greatest movie ever made, isn't it? I'm like,
no one says that. Literally no one says that.
No, but they go on about the soundtrack. I mean, the amount of people that bang on about the soundtrack. Era, I never heard that Greatest Showman before. It's amazing.
You and need to like, move out of Bristol because everyone...
Seriously, I do. I mean, I apologise to all the Bristolians that might be listening to this. That's just my... I'm from the West Country. I'm allowed to stereotype the accent or one of the accents. I'm allowed to do it. But that I've had that conversation with so many people. I'm like, what are you listening to? Like, you need to go and listen to more music.
But to circle back to my original point and to why I brought The Greatest Showman up is that it's a personal thing. It's because of you. The reason you don't like The Greatest Showman is because it's anachronistic. deliberate. Because it's anachronistic, because it takes moments that clearly aren't from the time period in which it's set, and
that's
then...
I do not have a problem with it. If I had a problem with anachronisms, I wouldn't be able to watch any historical movie ever. I don't like it because it's crap. It's visually ugly and the songs are terrible. That's why I don't like it. It's far more fundamental than the anachronisms. There are far more, you know, the whole movie, The Greatest Showman, is built on quicksand and it just collapses into it.
How I feel about Shrek.
About Shrek, there you go. So oddly, we've come to an accord about your hatred of Shrek by talking about another movie altogether. So,
we have already covered on the podcast.
Yeah, I know that's how infectious it is. I mean, The Greatest Showman is like the COVID-19 of this podcast. It gets in everywhere.
Well, I mean, we did it on episode 6.
Was it episode 6, was it? Oh my God. That was like 18 months ago, wasn't it? Wow, okay.
So anyway, I mean, it goes without saying that Shrek was a massive rip-roaring success. It was critically acclaimed. It was a massive financial success. It spawned sequels. It spawned a stage musical, spin-off films. It was huge. And I don't really need to sum up the impact of Shrek because I don't... That is part of the problem, is that I feel it's unjust and it's wildly overstating what is, to be honest, fine. But it is the film equivalent of watching Peter Kay tell you, hey, this thing from the 70s, that was great.
Whoa, I mean, you are really, really coming close to the line there by dissing Peter Kay. I warn you, do not go any further than that, okay? So seriously, because my family and I love Peter Kay. Well, all right, so just stop right there. So, I mean,
you can't tell me I'm wrong, because that's literally what he does. Anyway, I've had enough time to be angry. I think now we're going to have to hear Sean being angry. Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your choice of the Emoji Movie?
I mean, Patrick Stewart voices a poo. There's the plot. just, it's funny because I did actually, there was a Graham Norton clip from, I think, 4.5 years ago, and Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman were on talking about Logan, because they're both in Logan together, and then Ian McKellen joined, and that's one of the best episodes of Graham Norton. They are all so brilliant together. It's really funny. They all clearly really like each other. They've all worked with each other. Then I can't remember, and then Graham Norton brings up, so Patrick, you're voicing a new animated movie, and you can see Patrick Stewart visibly having to basically take a moment before he reveals what it is. And he, in that classic sort of, you know, Yorkshire RSC baritone, he goes, yeah, so I'm voicing a poop in the Emoji Movie. And it's like, and you can just literally see the life force draining out of him as he has to admit on the Graham Norton show that that's what he's doing. And it's one of the most extraordinary debasings of an actor that I've ever seen, having him in this movie.
He chose it.
I know he chose it. And
he is of a caliber that he can turn things down.
Yeah, I'm genuinely quite staggered, because I think it's one of the most, the film, the Emoji Movie, is one of the most witless, puerile pieces of trash that I think I've ever seen in my life. It's one of those films, you know, when you see something, it's not just bad, it actually rocks you back in your seat in terms of like, how did this get made? I mean, clearly the reason why it got made is because some bright spark at Sony, I think, is the distributor, saw Inside Out and went, here's the acting, and here, I want a bit of that. Although I don't think there are many Bristolians working at Sony, but anyway, that's my accent I'm going to go with.
So why don't you tell us about the plot of the film?
Well, there isn't really a plot. I mean, literally, it's vile.
There is a plot to this film.
I know you're not doing this as a point of good versus bad. Are you saying that Shrek doesn't have a plot and this one does?
No, Shrek does have a plot. I explained
this. Okay,
plot.
Right, fine. That's fine. Yeah, right, fine.
So does the Emoji Movie.
It's sort of further contaminating the movie. We've got TJ Miller, voices the meh emoji called Gene, who basically lives in Textopolis inside a young boy's phone with all the other emojis, and basically they have to effectively act out their pre-designated emotion in order so that it shows up on the young kid's phone. And then something happens, the boy's phone goes wrong, it completely fails in terms of like what Inside Out did brilliantly was it went inside the young girl's head and outside the young girl's head pretty much in equal measure, and it did it magnificently well. So you got both sides of the story. This doesn't show you enough of the external world for you to actually be invested. The idea of it building the world of a phone as a landscape, right, we need to get a sense of this externally. I mean, I can't believe how much I'm reading into this. Anyway, so the boy's phone goes wrong, and then Gene decides that he needs to be a meh emoji. He needs to be consistent with his meh emotions, but he's too fickle, he's too volatile.
Well, that was what made the phone go wrong, was that he was feeling emotions and he...
Yeah, I'm sorry, I glossed over that really important Citizen Kane style plot point there, but yeah, let's compare Shrek to
Citizen Kane and see how things come out.
Let's not go there, we're talking about this, unfortunately. So he basically breaks the phone because he's not met enough, so he basically has to go into the cloud or something with two irredeemably annoying characters, one of whom is voiced by my favourite actor, James Corden, who is the high five emoji. I mean, I literally remember watching this in the cinema thinking, okay, within 5 minutes, I'm slipping down the seven circles of hell. And then James Corden turned up and I'm like, okay, it really feels like I'm being tested here. It really feels like it's a Job-like thing, you know. And then they have to go through this digital landscape, which is literally, I mean, one of the most pernicious things that I've ever seen in any kind of movie, be it animated or otherwise, is when they go through the cloud and you basically get visualizations of apps, and not fictional apps. You get actual branded apps that exist in real life. You get things like Spotify turn up. They do some kind of like dance map thing. I forget what that's called.
Just Dance.
I'm like, you know, like in The Mask when Jim Carrey sees Cameron Diaz dancing in the club and his jaw goes, and then literally unfurls across the table. Mm-hmm. I was literally like, you have not seriously tried to make this for kids, because that is just so pernicious and so cynical and so wrong.
Has anyone ever invoked Citizen Kane and The Mask whilst talking about one film?
Well, me. So I'm unique in the annals of human history. So I'm just... And I thought the stench of this movie is really quite remarkable. It does the opposite of what a great animated movie should do. We mentioned Toy Story earlier. Toy Story taps into that childlike wonder of, are my toys alive when I leave the room? But Toy Story is also an incredibly profound story for adults about obsolescence, about being replaced, about childhood and adulthood rivalries. And Toy Story works on so many different levels. This movie, the Emoji Movie, is basically designed to filch money from kids who've got phones, or to promote kids to spend money on their phones, or their parents. You know, in the absence of a child, if a child doesn't have a phone, then it will be passed on to the parent. And I think it's just foul.
So, as a question to you,
please don't launch defense of this.
Well, I'm curious. You're okay comparing this to Pixar movies, but you're not okay comparing Shrek to Pixar movies because you see Pixar movies, it's another level up for Shrek.
I did compare Pixar movies to Shrek. I said Pixar was on another level to Shrek.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It is.
Yeah. So, but you,
and Pixar
you're actually
is on
sort
another
of
level
using,
to this.
You're actually using Pixar as the benchmark with which to measure the Emoji Movie. So I'm just curious as to the double standards. But hey, I mean, let's get this out of the way.
I don't see what the double standard is, but anyway, right, okay. So
let's get this out of the way. I'd never seen the Emoji Movie before because I'd heard so much about it. And I just sort of went, you know what? I'm all right. I'll tag out of this one. So you made me watch it for this podcast. And you know what? I didn't hate it as much as you
don't.
Do.
Oh, for God's sake.
It's not good. Let's get that out of the way. I don't enjoy it. I will not watch it again.
In the words of the thick of it, that was not good. That was the opposite of good. Bad.
I mean, yeah, it's corporate propaganda. Do you know what I mean? It's trying to manipulate children into downloading these apps. Like you have quite an interesting moment of self-awareness where they're talking about... They go into Facebook and they say, oh, look, everyone's just talking about themselves. And that's quite funny. That was quite a good joke.
See, I'm actually doing, we're looking at each other's recording this. I'm doing the Met emoji face, literally, as you said that. I was literally...
I mean, yeah, it's hard to forgive the fact this came from the same pen as School of Rock did. But it...
Did it? Oh, my God.
Yeah, Mike White.
I was going to use stronger language then. Did you hear I was on the verge of using stronger language there?
I mean, it's not good. It's not funny. It's not... Its product placement is all over the place. The film isn't original. Like, you've kind of hit on all of the problems, but I didn't hate it. It didn't make me angry. It might just be the three eggnogs I had whilst watching it, but I wasn't angry.
You were drunk when what this is the only way to watch this movie, to get drunk on pre-Christmas drinks. I wish I'd done that. But I mean, well, the problem is it didn't
I wasn't drunk. I just had three eggnogs.
Okay, well, that's the justification of every drunk person. I wasn't drunk, I just had three of them. So
it's not my fault the world started spinning, I fell over.
Yeah,
okay?
Exactly. Yes, it's not my fault the Emoji Movie suddenly started to seem good.
No. I mean, I'm not defending the Emoji Movie. I am not saying the Emoji Movie is good by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, but I didn't hate it as much as you.
What it is, and I'm not overstating this, what it is dangerous. This is the kind of movie that should never, ever, ever, ever be served up to children, because the message in it is dangerous. The message in it teaches that spending and corporate greed and materialistic nonsense is aspirational. That is not the message that kids should be told. I mean, least of all, I mean, I know this film is now 4 years old, least of all now, with all the nonsense going on in the world at the moment, that is the last thing that kids need to be fed, frankly. What kids need to be delivered to. I mean, I say this, I'm talking to the parent here. I'm not a parent. And if I had taken my child to go and see this, I would have walked them out of the cinema in the last 10 minutes. I wouldn't have listened to their protestation. Like, no, you're not watching that. I'm like, you are coming out of this cinema now. We are going to go back home. We are going to watch Toy Story. I would have put my foot down there, because I'm like, I'm not having your little brain contaminated with that, because it's wretched in the extreme. I'm genuinely quite amazed that they got away with it. I mean, clearly they got away with it because, again, that Bristolian that Sony watched Inside Out and thought, right, we'll have a bit of that. But they systematically redacted all the stuff to do with emotion and philosophy and character and heart. And all that's left is cynical corporate horror underneath it. It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen, without a shadow of a doubt. It's just vile. I'm sorry.
I mean, yeah, I'd say it's not good.
I love how you just tried to temper my arsenal a little bit.
So no, because I don't want it to be mistaken for the fact that I'm not standing up for it. But ultimately, the story is not dissimilar to Shrek.
I mean, there is a journey, but every animated movie has a journey in it. But Shrek doesn't.
No, but
have
the relation. So the one redeemable feature of
Don't say James Corden.
No, the one redeemable feature of the Emoji Movie is the moment where Anna Faris's jailbreak. She's sort of talking to Gene, the meh emoji, and he then begins to try and profess his love for her, and she says, "You know what? No, I'm not there. This isn't what I want. I've got bigger dreams than just being somebody's princess." And you know what? That wasn't a bad message. The fact that she has bigger ideas, the fact that she wants to go and do something other than simply be an animated princess, I was kind of on board with that.
I wasn't. You know, and the whole thing about, to go back to my point earlier, it completely fails to grapple with the idea that, you know, the vast majority of this movie is taking place inside a phone, which means that in order to see it in context, you need to get an idea of the external world. And the movie just does not grapple with that. There's a kid called Alex, I think, isn't it, whose phone we are seeing. And it does not get to grips whatsoever with the realities of kids using phones. But again, all it's interested in doing is force feeding apps down their throat, but it doesn't actually get the reality of what it means, the pressure of what it must be like to have a phone. I mean, you know, you and I are roughly the same age. I mean, to go back to when Shrek came out, I mean, no one had mobile phones back then. I mean, people of our age certainly didn't have mobile phones then. Well, I didn't. I'm assuming that you didn't, right?
I mean, maybe in about 2003, I had the old faithful Nokia 3310.
Yeah, about 2004, 2005 for me. Yeah, so I'm projecting on the character in the Emoji Movie is clearly meant to be of a different generation, 14-year-old with a mobile phone. Neither of us were really that age, but even so, you know, if the movie is dealing with that, it needs to have an air of profundity to it in order so that you're invested in what's happening with the kid, and therefore you're invested in what's happening in his phone. I mean, to say the movie systematically fails on every level is an understatement, and we haven't even got to Patrick Stewart as the poop yet.
Okay, so this is the ongoing thing that you say, that it's always like, whenever you talk to someone, you say, oh yeah, that's the Patrick Stewart poo movie. And, I mean, he's barely in it.
Mm.
He's got about four lines, and I don't think he deserves to be brought up as much as everyone else. The only thing is that more is expected of Patrick Stewart. But every actor goes off and does, every actor of a particular stature goes off and does films for the paycheck. You talk to Michael Caine about Jaws 4. He said, no, I never saw it, but I saw the house it built.
I mean,
I don't damn Patrick Stewart for accepting this. I do quite like the fact that Jordan Peele was initially offered the role of Poop. And he said that this led to his retirement from acting.
I did not know that. That makes me like Jordan Peele all the more, frankly. I had not heard that. And then Jordan Peele was obviously a voice with Keegan-Michael Key in Toy Story 4, didn't he? So he made the right decision there. So,
it's the right one of the two, but great decisions are different things.
I mean, it's interesting that in the Emoji Movie, he's not credited as Patrick Stewart. He's credited as Sir Patrick Stewart. So it's basically
the Ben Kingsley flex.
Well, I don't think it was Patrick Stewart insisting on it. I think the filmmakers seized on it because there's some sort of act of debasement or degrading going on here. Or maybe it's just kind of like a weird ironic joke that you won't believe that we got an actual sir involved in our Emoji Poop movie. But look, here he is credited on the poster. And it's, yeah, I'm genuinely quite staggered. I'm appalled. You know, I'm very rarely appalled like this, but I was very appalled with this movie.
I mean, it's not good. And I completely agree with you on for the most part, on the messaging. I do think it has that redeemable moment with Jailbreak when she turns down the man's advances purely because she wants to go off and live her own life. And I'm on board with that. But I don't hate it as much as you do. Like I said, I watched this for the first time for this podcast. I've not brought too many sort of preconceptions to it. But I will sort of throw out there immediately. We watched two animated films for this week's podcast. I watched neither of them with my children because I didn't want to put them through that. I mean, they've already seen Shrek because, you know, wife's influence, I can't stop that. But I could stop the Emoji Movie, and I did. And it will not be on hard rotation for them because it's just not right. Good. But the thing
is, take it outside, put it in the sacrificial wicker man, set fire to it, and just don't go anywhere near it again.
But so, the thing is, you can't look at every animated film in comparison to Pixar because, like we said, Pixar are almost a league of their own, similar to Disney animated movies. For the most part, they're a league in their own, which, by the way, is a James Corden TV show.
Mm.
But I think it's dangerous to compare every animated film to the best. It's like comparing every Scorsese movie to Taxi Driver or Raging Bull, when clearly they're not going to be that. There's other moments of them. I don't think you can compare every film based on medium.
Okay, so I take Pixar out of the equation, right? So we're talking about the Emoji Movie. Pixar is not being considered. This is still a pile of 2D poop, even on its own terms. Even when removing Pixar from the equation, this movie aspires to be over the hedge. You know, one of the DreamWorks movies. This movie dreams of getting up to that level. That's how poor it is.
This is the thing, right? And this is the point that I'm making is that you can't compare this to Inside Out because you can't compare any movie to Inside Out because Inside Out is phenomenal. Inside Out does such an amazing job. It's such a beautiful film. And you can't compare these films to it. So I just think it's not only is it unfair to the films that we're talking about, but it's kind of also unfair to Pixar and saying, look, you are the gold standard. Off you go. Continue doing greatness. Which, you know, they not doing as consistently as they were.
No, they're not. I mean, I would contest the idea that you can't compare it to Inside Out. I mean, this film rips off the story of Inside Out. It just replaces the inside of a young girl's head with the inside of a phone.
I mean, it's clearly the starting point for this film. It's absolutely the starting point for this film. But
it's the start, middle, and end point.
But the thing is, with Inside Out, it's such a good film. It's so good. So if you knock anything off it, it's going to be hard to come anywhere near that. And like, there's no way I'm turning around saying this does. There's absolutely no chance. But it's not as bad as the Razzies make out. It's not as bad as the reviews make out. I say 7% on Rotten Tomatoes, something like that. It's not that bad. I've seen other animated films that are just as bad as this.
The corporate cynicism of it really sickens me. And it really offends me.
Yeah, but I mean, you get that in James Bond films. You get that in Marvel films. You get that.
But the thing is,
product placement in all films.
Yeah, but the product placement is the landscape of the movie. In James Bond, I accept that you get product placement. At least in James Bond, it's a reasonably glancing thing. And in any James Bond movie, if the narrative is good, the product placement will kind of glance off it. And you'll kind of move past. In this, the product placement is the narrative. That's the point. They've built a narrative around product placement, and it's just disgusting. I mean, I'm old enough to be able to recognize what's being fed to me. An impressionable young kid who then goes, here's the axe again. Here, man, I want to know what that Spotify is. You get me onto that? And it's just like, if I'd taken my child to see it and that was their reaction, like if they didn't remember anything about the movie and went, here, I want to know what that Just Dance is. It's like, right, no, let's not talk about that again. Also, I should say, this movie also debases another Patrick, which is Patrick Doyle, who wrote the score, who is one of the best film composers in business. Like, what is Patrick Doyle doing attached to this movie? I mean, honestly, you know, his work with Kenneth Branagh, you know, Much Ado About Nothing, Hamlet, he wrote the scores for Sense and Sensibility, for Christ's sake. I mean, he is just one of the, you know, lovely sense of flowing romanticism in his best work. Like, what I think he worked with the director on maybe the director's previous movie, Igor, which actually Igor wasn't too bad, actually. I think that had the voice of John Cusack in it. So it's a step down for the director as well. I mean, blimey, Patrick Doyle is really plumbing the depths with this one.
I mean, it's a step down for most people involved. Like I said, I'm not... You list off some of the names. We've got Anna Faris, Maya Rudolph, Stephen Wright, Jennifer Coolidge, Patrick Stewart, Christina Aguilera, Sofia Vergara, Jake T. Austin plays the real life teenager. So, you know, it's a step down for most of them. It's beneath almost all of them. But it goes back to the problem with Shrek, which is getting a load of celebrities into a recording studio and then hoping for the best.
I I can't believe, I mean, fair enough, you don't like Shrek. I don't mind you not liking Shrek, but drawing narrative comparisons between Shrek and the Emoji Movie.
Stylistic comparisons.
Stylistic comparisons. Okay, stylistic comparisons between Shrek and the Emoji Movie. I'm like, wow.
Get a group of famous actors, some people that are famous for comedy, and you know what? Let's put them in a recording studio and maybe we'll get a funny movie out of it. Nah.
I mean, at the very least, Shrek is not populated by the little icons that you get in your phone, which is just one of the most, again, cynically fatuous.
No, it does it with fairy tales. And then the moment that you come out and you say, Mummy, Daddy, can I read Pinocchio? It's the same thing.
But fairy tales owe themselves to literature and to art and to cinema, which is fundamentally a good thing. The Emoji Movie is built around the horrible little widgety things that you've got in your phone. Like that, there's nothing redemptive about that. I mean, at least with Shrek, it's drawing on a history of art. Whether you think it's doing anything interesting with them or not, you know, the origins of Shrek actually have some kind of artistic credibility. To say that the Emoji Movie does not have any artistic credibility is to underestimate the lack of artistic credibility, frankly. I mean, I can't, honestly, I didn't think this argument was going to, I thought you were going to be on my side firmly with this. So, I mean, you know.
No, I broadly speaking, I am.
But again, it's with the nuances that we do see.
No, I'm just not as vehement about it as you are. It didn't anger me to that extent. I just thought it was a not very good animated movie.
Well, I mean, at least we've lived up to our theme today. We both got angry at different points. So,
I'm still angry about Shrek. I will be angry about Shrek.
I'm bloody livid about having to watch this again. I mean,
you chose it. This was within your choice.
I know, it's my fault. Yeah, I know. It is my fault.
I think this theme began as your idea because you wanted to watch the Emoji. I think there was a self-hating thing happening. Yeah, there was a particularly low moment.
I've carried these toxic thoughts of this film around with me probably for over 4 years since when it came out, and I really need to. I mean, Christmas is coming. I don't want to be angry over Christmas. I want to get this off my chest now. You know, it's so there. I think we have it.
I think we do. I mean, like we said, it was kicked massively in the reviews. It won, quote unquote, won 4 Razzies, including the worst picture, being the first animated film to do so. And at the box office, good. I mean, it had a budget of $50 million and took $217.8 million. You know, it no one's sticking up for this film. Let's just put that one straight to bed.
I'm certainly not sticking up for it.
But I just didn't find it as hateful as I think you did. So next week on Frame to Frame, we are going to be looking at lost gloves in festive movies. So we'll be talking about...
See, I didn't know what theme that was going to be. You sprung that on me literally for the first time as we recorded. It's okay. I like that. That's a good theme.
I mean, you know the films. That's why it's funny. So next week we're talking about the theme of lost gloves in festive movies. So I'm really looking forward to it because... basically, we needed to try and find a theme around this, around these two films. And we have to throw a shout out to good friend of the show, Ellen. She's managed to come through on providing the wording for this most auspicious of themes. So we're beginning our Christmas season because we'll be in December by the time that the next episode comes out. So we are into our festive movies. So we'll be doing 3 episodes, all themed around Christmas films. Or festive films at the very least. So we will obviously reveal as we go along, but I'm looking forward specifically to next week where we talk about lost gloves in festive films. We always say we're a proud part of the We Made This podcast network. You can find out an awful lot more about the network on Twitter, on the Instagram, on the Facebook, on the website, on the Patreon page. You can find the network on the website of wemadethisnetwork.com. You can always get in touch with us, so Sean and Andy at Frame to Frame. We're on Instagram, we're on Letterboxd, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on email. All of the handles are within the show notes, and do feel free to follow us separately as well, because you can keep up to date with all of the random things that Sean manages to write and all of the basketball thoughts that I have as well. So until next week, where we are talking about lost gloves in festive movies, I'm Andy Williams.
And I'm Sean Wilson.
And please continue on listening to hear some of the other great shows on the We Made This podcast network. Bye-bye.
Elsewhere on We Made This. Podcast 616.
a Marvel Universe podcast.
And I think that's why she is immediately likable. You know, I liked her straight away. I find her engaging. I think she's well performed, well written. I think she's a strong new character that they're bringing in because she has a big legacy in the comics, and I think they've really done it well on the evidence of this and the second episode.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right there to mention that she's definitely rebelling, isn't she, from her upbringing. Like you say,
yeah,
she lives in
in a
like quite an impoverished kind of apartment, it looks like, nothing special, and she could definitely afford better, couldn't she? So, but for all I know, that's like $1 million apartment in New York.
<I don't know. laughs> It probably is, yeah.
Prices are so crazy there. But
we dig music.
I tell you what, for all the anger of the Riot Girl movement in the early 90s, we had nothing then compared to how f***ing angry we are all now. We're perimenopausal. and I want to start a new girl band called Waning Estrogen, and we're going to take on the fucking world.
Although based on last month's episode, unless you have to use a sat nav to get anywhere,
yeah, the tours might be a little bit. Get someone
this
else to drive you.
This is not where I'm meant to be going.
Shipwrecked and comatose. A Red Dwarf podcast.
Should we talk about the set on Moneybags?
Let's.
I quite like it. As much as it seems a little bit shonky for a show that's giving away that much money. But I like the shoot. I like the visual of pushing lots of money down the chute. I thought that was cool. The conveyor belt at least works and isn't as shonky as the Generation Game. And it's fast as well.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's some poor bloke on a bike. It looks like an actual conveyor belt, so it's not some bloke on a bike because it doesn't stutter.
Yeah, I watched it initially thinking, how smooth is this going to be? And it's very smooth, you know. It's got value.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.